This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. It's now time for the MGO Blog Roundtable brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTK.com. Here with the MGO Blog Roundtable, according to Craig, I have a grizzly bear across from me.
Yeah.
Named Brian Cook. I didn't know grizzly bears
grizzly bears drive Mercedes-Benz?
That too. And they drink Diet Coke.
I just think that drinking Diet Coke at 9 a.m. is like, there's very few actual humans who could do that, but maybe grizzly bears could.
You can drink coffee at 9 a.m., but not Diet Coke?
Yeah, I admit I do. But Diet Coke is, you know, different thing altogether.
A caffeinated beverage? Yeah.
Did your cold last week get to your head?
Speaking of that, you know, I'm looking at this miniature Paul Bunyan behind Sam's head.
Yeah.
I think we should put Paul Bunyan in a wood chipper.
Okay.
I think we should put the trophy in a wood chipper. And if we lose next year, hand them back the sawdust. Because I really don't care if we ever play Michigan State again.
Yeah.
I mean, do you really care?
Not really.
Not really either. Not me either. I really don't care. I don't care if we ever play them again. I care about as much as whether Michigan would play Illinois again.
I revel in their inferiority.
Because, you know,
And we're going to get back to showing it.
There's no Red Cedar message board for Illinois where you can pop on and people are like, we should leave the Big Ten.
Because the Big Ten has so much, Michigan State has so much value added to the Big Ten. Like if Michigan State left the Big Ten tomorrow, no one would notice.
The only thing I'd be asking is like, can you take Rutgers with you?
Yeah.
I mean, there's Tom Izzo.
He's always amusing.
He's great.
Yeah.
So. He was good fodder for radio last season, for sure.
Ed Fang, that's the other voice you hear. Ed, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Sam?
Playing a lot of weird guys.
I'm doing. Right? That's a classic line. Anyway, Michigan State, a beatdown, a dominating performance by Michigan. You guys know the stats. I don't have to tell you. Yeah. The offense, they practice all week. Except for Lewerke.
We don't know if he practiced or not.
I mean, he kind of practiced. He doesn't know if he really practiced. Ask Antonio if he practiced.
That's like a legit. He's injured, though, because some of those passes were just like, that is not.
He was bad.
That is not a minimally competent D1 quarterback, and he's been that in the past.
Well, I actually buy that. Yeah, he may have been injured, and I like Lewerke. I think he's a nice quarterback, and he seems like an okay person. But why not have the story straight? Practice last week or didn't practice last week. I don't care what it is, but one or the other. Instead, presumably, D'Antonio's just lying to us because he lied about other things. He might as well lie about that.
He later cleaned it up and said, okay, he practiced. He just didn't throw the ball down the field. Tell me what he said.
I think he's on Urban Meyer's meds.
I think he smoked it, but he didn't inhale.
He said, because, I mean, what could you say after your offensive coordinator comes out and says, well, he practiced? What are you going to do? Someone's lying there, right?
Right.
Well, so, like most of the team, they're just not on the same page.
Yeah, so, that's a pretty good sort of segue.
One thing that jumped out to me as I was doing the film review of this game is that Michigan really won tactically. So people were talking about like the double-A gap blitz and how it didn't really happen, but they actually ran it. Michigan just picked it up almost every time. And then on the first drive, it was a miracle that Michigan did not have a long touchdown on the first drive.
Yeah, the fourth and the third and two play.
Not even that. Uh-huh. Like they had like Ronnie Bell on a sweep.
He slipped on a crappy field.
He slips and he like makes contact with one of his lead blockers. There was another keep from Patterson where he just doesn't set up his block very well. So he's got McCune in space, and there's a safety, and he just kind of runs to the inside of McCune the whole play. And if he's able to put that guy on the wrong side of the block, that could also be a long touchdown. So Michigan really came out of the gate, and they had it, but they just couldn't execute it right on a number of different plays. So I felt like, you know, there were a couple opportunities in the first half to just kind of put this, like, it's 21-0 and it's all over but the shouting. Right. And there will be shouting because it's Michigan, Michigan State. and, you know, there's a couple instances in this game where they're running slants and Michigan has trapped that coverage. And if Brian Lewerke throws an accurate ball, that's a pick six. And it just didn't quite happen. But I felt, you know, going over the film, that the yardage was a completely fair representation of what happened.
Yeah, no doubt. To see Michigan going to the defensive side and accepting that Brian Lewerke wasn't 100%, I get that. But you go into this game again without Rashawn Gary, and as I said the day before, as I was trying to prep people for him not playing, man, Kwity Paye and Josh Uche have come up so big for this team.
Dude, and he's like unblockable.
And Uche comes in again, and he's in the backfield wreaking havoc.
Yeah, I think I said on our podcast that between Paye and Uche, they have most of Rashawn Gary. It's just not the same person. Mm-hmm. So Paye was excellent as a run defender against Wisconsin, and Uche is consistently getting like a dozen snaps per game, but making an impact on those snaps. And he reminds me a lot of Chase Winovich 2 years ago, because he was behind Taco Charlton then, and he'd get on for 10 snaps, but he would do something on six of those snaps. So Uche is a high-impact player, and I think he's really living up to the preseason hype, which was a little bit of a question early, but now he's a team of sacks.
I got a question, Brian, about the third and two in the first series, which, again, I thought Michigan came out, had a really nice first series in terms of the construction of it and what should have happened. And is that a... I mean, do you view that as a sort of faux split zone? Where the tight end passes the, or are you calling that an arc?
Yeah, that's an arc block.
An arc block. Okay.
So Michigan did a really good job of confusing people about what they were doing on the backside of the play this week. Mm-hmm. So often split zone is when the tight end pulls across the formation and gets a kickout block. And if you do that a bunch, one of the solutions is to have your defensive end crash really hard and get to that tight end before he can make that kickout block. But once you start doing that, if the tight end passes that guy up, then your quarterback has an easy pull read and a lead blocker on the edge. And Michigan State had nobody out there at all.
Yeah, that's a touchdown probably.
If
he pulls.
It's remarkable that, like, in this game there were probably, I don't know, five or six opportunities for Patterson to pull where nobody on Michigan State's defense was even considering the idea that he would have the ball. And a week after Wisconsin, I'm like, that's not good strategy there. But that's what they went with.
I mean, the thing that stuck out to me about this game are the last two meaningful drives for Michigan. The first one they score a touchdown on. Next one they don't score, but they burn about 7 minutes. And I really think we got to compliment the offensive line. I think they got good push. They averaged 5 yards a carry against what we were talking about as a top five run defense in Michigan State. This is at the end of the game. I don't know if it's just randomness that they played better or whether that's the fruits of the strength and conditioning that we saw Harbaugh change over the summer, but that was the best part of the game.
And the matchups down the field, I just feel like heading into this game, we're never going to hold up for them. It was all about could they get to Shea. If he had time, Michigan was going to win the battles in the secondary, and the biggest example of that was clearly Donovan Peoples-Jones. It was, and that was the time he hit him. Obviously, you know, in the first half, you had him in the end zone on that outcut that he I don't know what happened there, but made up for it in a huge way with that play. And once that play happened, it just felt like that's it. There's no way Michigan State's going to be able to come back.
Well, then they go three and out, and Michigan goes on a 12-play, 84-yard touchdown drive. So, you know, they really kind of put their foot down in this game. And if Caron Higdon didn't get a penalty for, I guess, standing up and having his ankle twisted, that last drive could have been a game killer. I mean, it took 6 minutes off the clock. They needed two more first downs. And you know, they get the 15-yard penalty, which was one of, like, three completely phantom penalties in this game.
Yeah, that was a strange one because he stands up and he's in the Michigan bench. He's not even by.
That was Bush. And there was one on Michigan State, too. Okay. Like, I think Jarvis got one. Like, he pancaked Kemp, and then he was just kind of giving him a little pushing to keep him down, and that was a flag.
There was one that got me. It was a roughing call. Where I can't remember who the defender was. I had to go. Was it Chase that got it?
That went low.
Come on, man. So what is going low? Is it below the knee or is it below the waist?
It's like at the knee.
Yeah, he hit him in the thigh.
I mean, it's a call based on like two injuries that happened in the history of the NFL, but one of them was Tom Brady. So the NFL put this in, and college football put it in. It's a bad.
That's
rule.
What I was going back but and forth.
It
with.
Is
what
a rule.
It may be, but he didn't hit him in the knee.
I agree with you. Like, I think that should be reserved for pretty egregious events. I mean, Josh Ross got called for it earlier in the year.
He got
shoved into the quarterback, and he's falling. It's like, well, what is he supposed to do? It's one of those really frustrating penalties where you get penalized for playing football.
Absolutely.
That was just the penalty drive where the game looked over. Michigan State gets 45 yards in penalties, and then
50.
Michigan,
that was 50 yards in penalties.
And then Michigan comes out and sacks them two straight downs. And
honestly, they should have kept taking penalties. It would have been funny.
they were overmatched in this game, Michigan State. They knew it. I think that was for them. Their strategy was intimidation. It started obviously before the game. So you guys, your take on the pregame dust up and everything that has transpired since.
I mean, they wanted a confrontation. They got a confrontation.
It was a donkey show. First of all, I mean, this is a great tradition going back 8 years or something where they do this walk. And the whole point of it was to rope-a-dope Michigan, to get Michigan out on the field, to come out late, and then say, hey, we're in charge here on their stupid march down the field with their helmets on. So they provoked it. Harbaugh said exactly the truth. He gets reprimanded for saying exactly the truth. D'Antonio lies about it. And I guess Michigan State gets fined $10,000 or something, which in the scheme of things, I think says what the Big Ten thought about it.
I mean, Michigan State's used to double-digit losses to Michigan, but five digits is going to hurt.
You know, the thing that jumps out to me is they assign blame clearly here. With the fine.
Right.
So they say this is Michigan State's fault. And D'Antonio, the failure to mitigate foreseeable conflict, I think they said. So what was Harbaugh's role in this?
Saying the truth too loud?
Right.
He
wasn't
the truth.
On the field.
Just saying exactly what happened.
Saying exactly what Jim Delaney said. This could have been a lot worse. This was in Delaney's statement. Mm-hmm. So you're reprimanding him for bringing attention to an issue that you wouldn't have looked at. Were it not for Jim Harbaugh answering a question in a press conference.
I mean, a reprimand doesn't mean anything.
I hear you.
Put it in his permanent file. Like, nobody cares.
You know, I don't know what a reprimand is either, but still, it's like, come on, man. Really, dude? It's not necessarily for us here as much as it is people who don't pay attention to Michigan or Michigan State. They look at it and say, oh, well, Harbaugh's at fault, too. It's like, no, he's not. No, he's not.
Right. I don't think anybody sane thinks that. Maybe Jerry DiNardo, but
I mean, it's just nice for the Michigan State media people to have something to talk about this week instead of the team.
Bringing it down frame by frame. How much more effort did they put into this than like Max Bulla, the captain of the team, getting suspended for the Rose Bowl? Is there anything more pathetic than the Michigan State beat? Anything in the world? I couldn't tell you.
No.
Just a bunch of shameless bootlickers. Unbelievable.
I think the one they were using to show that there was really this thing was really embellished was when the Rockettes when they got to Khalik Hudson and they unlocked arms. It's like, well, that made sense. whoever those guys are, it's like I am not messing with Khalik Hudson. No, the little guy's okay. Not this dude.
Yeah.
We're going to walk right by.
You want to mess with Devin Bush and Khalik?
Between the two? Yeah. Absolutely.
Devin looks big to me, man.
I wouldn't mess
with Devin Bush.
Between the two, I don't know if there's anyone on the team.
I'm taking a pass on both.
I would take a pass on both, but if you made me have to get smoke from one, it wouldn't be Khalik Hudson. And clearly the Michigan State guys made that choice, too.
I mean, it's more and more obvious to me that Mark D'Antonio is the Elmer Gantry of national coaches. I mean,
is right, there, let everybody get on Wikipedia. It's Craig Stockton.
Sinclair Lewis, Brian, come on. You read the book?
I did not.
All right. Never mind.
Wait, it's Babbitt, right? Is that the book?
No, it's Elmer Gantry is the book.
That's the name of the book?
I think so, yeah.
All right.
Now who looks like an uneducated fool?
That's right.
Look it up. Elmer Gantry, Mark D'Antonio, same person.
Well, if you look at the way things have gone since Jim Harbaugh showed up, you have two ass kickings that are a little bit disguised because Michigan didn't quite take advantage of them. And then 2 years ago, they have like an entire fourth quarter where Michigan knows they're going to win if they just make Michigan State take time going down the field. And Michigan State's like, fine. So that's like a mutually agreed on one touchdown loss instead of a three touchdown loss. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have the most unlikely play in college football history in year one. You have John O'Korn in year three. So, like, Mark D'Antonio was pretty lucky not to be over.
John O'Korn in five turnovers.
Don't you feel like they know it? They see it?
Yeah.
Like, the inevitability of the returning to how things were, how things had been for the majority of our lives.
I think they're hanging their hat on the injuries now. And then if this happens next year...
And they've got a junior team. They're back. I mean, their team next year is pretty
much back. I don't
know
why you'd want that offense back, but sure.
But at least their experience.
So if this happens again next year, then that'll be like, ooh, this is... I don't think there'll be anywhere to hide.
No, but they'll talk about, Michigan State's won.
They'll talk about class.
8 of 11.
That's what I want. I want Michigan State to talk about class.
And Michigan's only covered once... I think it was the first time Michigan's covered the spread in like 11 years. They'll talk about that. They'll get it all cranking. And
well, it's going to be interesting to see how they finish. They are taking on Purdue this week.
That should be a heck of a game.
No, heck of a game. What makes you think that's going to be a heck of a game?
If I bet, I would bet on Purdue in this game. Yeah, the spread is like
one or two.
It's like one, and that blows my mind. Like, they're probably going to be playing a walk-on at center. You don't have any idea what's going on with their quarterback position. And Rondale Moore is the truth, folks.
The whole offense is explosive, and we should talk about their opponent from this past week. But Purdue's a couple of bad penalties in a close game against Missouri from being undefeated right now.
Okay.
So you would really... I mean, not that the Jeff Rom.
But the losses were not against...
Okay, fine. It was Eastern. I get it.
Eastern. Eastern.
And they lost. Didn't they lose to Northwestern at home also?
They did.
Yes, but yeah.
Okay.
That was in part because of the world's worst penalty.
And they were extremely undisciplined. They had some horrible...
Hey, that's the Nick Horway, I guess, right?
So we got to get to a break. Back on the other side, really wanted to get to Ohio State and how things look down there in Columbus. Now, second year in a row, where they got their doors blown off by a team that wasn't ranked. So we will dive into that on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket.
The MGO Blog Roundtable continues here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket, brought to you by Home Shore Lending. Home Shore Lending is a local company, and you work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
So, guys, MGO Blog Roundtable back with us. We have Ed Fang, Brian Cook, and Craig Ross. Second year in a row, Ohio State just gets blown out. I mean, it's just blown off the field. Now, you know, caution Michigan fans to not get carried away with confidence, because last year they got blown out by Iowa, and then we saw, obviously, Ohio State bounce back
But it's two completely different stories in the sense that, like, Ohio State's defense really failed against Iowa last year. No one's arguing about that. But Ohio State's defense has just failed this season. They've had terrible games against Oregon State, TCU, Minnesota. Minnesota can't do anything on offense.
And they ran all over
this unit. I don't know what's wrong with this unit. We talked a little bit about it last year. They're 90th in my adjusted yards per play. I think the offense is good. I think Haskins, who was basically the only part of that team I had questions about heading into the season, they can't run the ball either.
And it really shot. Well, you know why?
Why?
The quarterback run is non-existent with Haskins now, and that's why they struggle so much in the red zone. Or even Urban Meyer talked, we are not a good red zone team, and that seems unheard of for Ohio State.
You know,
it seemed like they were automatic in the red zone for years.
I have an article from a number of years ago written by Urban Meyer saying, here's the one big thing that any spread coach has to do. He said, if you're going to run a spread, your quarterback has to be able to run it.
Right.
You cannot run a spread offense, right. He says, if the quarterback can't run it. And that's his theme over and over in this paper. And so he, you know, Haskins isn't going
to
run it.
Does that take you from like a top five rush offense to 116th?
It should. No, that to me, that's more about the offensive line right there. And we started out this year talking about Michigan's offensive tackle issues. Have you watched them?
Yeah, Price. I mean,
Prince.
Yeah.
Oh, he is horrible.
Yeah.
He had that period 2 years ago against Penn State where he's just getting wrecked, play in and play out. And, you know, watching the Minnesota game and Minnesota's doing it to him. I'm like, what? This is 2 years later and you can't handle a golden gopher? So they've got some issues everywhere. And when you've got 73 passing attempts setting a program record
73
by 21, you know, Woody Hayes is looking up from hell being like, what's going on?
And you got Mike Weber and J.K. Dobbins. This is supposed to be, you know, arguably the best running back tandem, or certainly one of them in the country. And you wouldn't know it to watch that team.
I don't think it's the running backs. I think it's they're just.
Well, their line was graded, I think, sixth in the country by Pro Football Focus 6 weeks into the season. They haven't updated it since, but I don't think it's that. I think it's the fact that they don't have a way to have a running game without a running quarterback. And that's something that they've had, well, Urban Meyer's had for the duration of his career.
Right.
And to shift gears like that, they just are incapable of doing it. And that fourth down play against Purdue where they're running a bubble screen from the two, just like, what on earth is going on here?
It's the microcosm we're talking about. I mean, they are a team, to me, without an offensive identity now. And that's the problem. And it's gonna be that way with Dwayne. I mean, I didn't buy it initially, guys, when they say we're gonna have more of a pro style look forever, for whatever that means for Ohio State. I was like, this is just a talking point. To their credit, they tried to do it. I just don't know that Urban Meyer can coach an offense like that.
No. And I had something for this. Craig, say something.
Elmer Gantry?
No.
No.
I mean, you're committing to that kind of system when you take on a guy like Haskins, who's clearly talented, can put the ball where you want it, but he can't move.
Do you use more Tate Martell?
Yes. There's no question. If I was Ohio State, there would be a Tate Martell red zone package.
Red zone package. Okay. Yeah. That I can.
Like, or find who was the Oklahoma guy who was a tight end eventually? The belldozer. Get the belldozer back here. Anything you got to do to be able to run the ball from the two against Purdue.
Now, they're off this week. Is State
yeah,
off?
Yeah, they're off.
Yeah, Ohio so State maybe they will, you know, do something.
They are definitely putting that in as we speak, unless they're run by complete idiots. Which is my... Probably not.
Well, probably not. Didn't they just hire Josh? I mean, isn't he back coaching?
Who?
Zach Smith.
There's no way.
He had a plea deal where he had... Never mind.
All right, never mind. That's not true. I misread it.
All right, I remember what I was going to say earlier is that the thing about Haskins is that so many of his throws are short, and then you get huge runs afterwards. Right. Any defense that can actually tackle Paris Campbell is really going to shut down the effectiveness of that passing game because it's so much short stuff where they get run after the catch, and I feel like Michigan is a team well-positioned to do that.
734-998-1050. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Email us at studio@wtk.com.
Yeah, and I don't know what the reaction to this is going to be. Michigan's finally moved ahead of Ohio State in my member numbers, and I think Michigan would open as either a pick or a favorite in this game if it happened this weekend at
Ohio State. Wow. Let's go to the phones, talk to Tony and Indy. Tony, you're on the Michigan Insider. What's up?
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing this morning?
Good. Great.
Good. I just want to get you guys' take on two things. It seems like Joe Klatt has been going around doing this drive-through talking about Michigan. He's going from media outlets talking about Michigan, and he mentioned yesterday that Michigan's biggest weakness is the quarterback position. I wanted to get you guys' take on that, and also wanted to get you guys' take on when Marcus said yesterday that Purdue is the best team in the Big Ten.
So wait, back up a bit. Back up. He said the biggest weakness was Shea Patterson, and what was his basis for that? What did he, what evidence did he give? What points did he use to back that up?
Well, Sam, what he was saying is that when he watched the game Saturday, is that he felt like that Shea wasn't dialing in on the receivers when they were open. He also lent some critique against the play calling. He didn't think that the coaches was utilizing the passing game as much as they should with our big receivers that Michigan have.
How much he's watched Michigan.
He's in two of our games.
It wasn't just on Patterson, but he did say Patterson missed some open receivers.
He did.
He also said that he didn't think that the coaching staff was, you know, Pep Hamilton was using the passing game as much as he should with the what our receivers that we have.
I mean, Clad also said one thing about right when the ball when it starts to rain and the ball's not completely wet and a little slick, and I think that was one of the passes that Patterson missed.
I don't necessarily entirely disagree with Clatt. I think if you phrase it in a different way, I would agree with it, is that Michigan has a lot of opportunity here to get better at the quarterback position.
I agree with that.
So,
yeah, me too.
You know, there's the waggle where he's got Peoples-Jones for a touchdown. He doesn't pull the trigger there. He has a couple of misreads. He has some throws that are off in this game. Like, there were two throws that were almost intercepted in this game because they were inaccurate. I think that's probably the weather, because we haven't seen that before. But he had a bumpy game,
and you can see
like if he can put it together, if he can pull the Rudock, then Michigan is really, really good.
And I actually think that's a reasonable comparison. But I think it's a transition that's even more dramatic for him, so that he is operating at this level. I think is a testament to, you know, the fact that the guy obviously can, he has legs that he can bring, put in the mix as well. He's a flat out ball. The guy asked me to describe Shea Patterson last week leading up to the game. I said, he's a ball player. He's a baller. Yeah. That's the best way. I wouldn't say dual threat or, you know, a baller. He figures out a way.
I think our quarterback play has been pretty good. I think there's upside, if that's what you're saying. I think he can play a lot better.
Yeah.
I think his ability has not yet come close to what it.
He does a lot of things that are impressive. The combination of his ability to run and his downfield accuracy is not something you get very often. But he does some frustrating things and popping the tape.
Now let's go to his more serious.
To me. The things that I see are things that you could, as the season goes on, as we get deeper, you could see him have a. I mean, it was like the halfway point. Rudock all of a sudden,
right? They have the bye. He comes back and he's like, "Oh, I'm a different quarterback."
Right? He just looks like a dude.
And this is a bye week
after that, and so you can kind of see as he gets more comfortable. And you know, Jake Rudock had the benefit of coming from a similar system at the very least in terms of responsibilities. And with Shea, and he spoke to this last week. Someone said, "Hey, is it different for you? Is the pressure that's the biggest difference? And you're playing in these big time games with all of these expectations. And you got so many weapons around you." He said, "I had weapons around me at Ole Miss, and
yes, he did.
You know, you come in with a big time recruiting class, and there are expectations." He said, "The biggest difference is the system." Like, absolutely, this guy. It's so different what his charge is from snap to snap in this system compared to where he came from.
So last year at Ole Miss, they had one of the worst pass blocking lines I've ever seen, and I saw Michigan last year. So I'm doing his games, and I'm like, this is – I did the Alabama game, and there was no point because every play he got a virtually unblocked guy right up the gut. And so the offense was built around their complete inability to protect, and that meant there were screens one way, and the other way he'd have an option where he could just throw a fade. And that worked well against bad teams because he had great receivers. Against Alabama, it was, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, his left tackle is an NFL prospect, too, down there. Right,
but, you know,
but it's just everyone else?
Hugh Freeze gets fired. They promote the offensive line coach, who's basically a Sonic manager they found on the street. And they're completely disorganized, and every blitz gets through. So, you know, the idea that Shea Patterson was going through reads last year, a little bit, but not very frequently because they just didn't have the protection. So I think he's uncannily accurate when you give him time, and I think that he just needs to hang in the pocket a little bit more here. And he's kind of got that like Devin Gardner stuff from late in his career where he just doesn't trust his protection quite enough, and it's just like kind of get there. And he's very, very close.
Yeah. You know, I think Purdue is playing some really, really good football right now. I don't think they're the best team in the Big Ten.
Marcus Ray said something for attention. I'm shocked.
Yeah, well, I mean that was, if Michigan were 4-3 with losses to Eastern and Northwestern at home.
And Missouri.
Would Marcus Ray be saying that, oh, Michigan is the best team in the Big Ten? I don't think so. So it's an absurd take.
All those losses were close, Craig.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, their offense, I will say this, their Purdue offense, it looks the most explosive in the league right now. But, it's you know, your team is more than your offense.
Yeah.
Is Brom going to leave?
Your offense.
Keep the offer.
That's why you want Purdue to keep doing well. Yeah. George Karloftis is an animal, dude.
So
it's an animal.
So someone in Louisville is rich enough to be like, we're pulling the trigger. That's Louisville is a city of wealth and class and also the Papa John's guy. But they're gonna do it. They can do it.
Well, doesn't he have a $14 million buyout?
Yeah, but that's not even all that uncommon these days.
Yeah.
Like last year, I mean, they've had some issues because you know, what's his face, the criminal sex vampire.
Petrino.
Did you say the other criminal one. Sex vampire?
Yeah, the criminal sex vampire, the basketball coach.
Patino.
He's like suing him for his buyout, but he's not going to get that. He got caught fired for cause deservedly.
Criminal sex vampire.
I mean.
Okay.
And no lies detected, Sam. No lies detected. So they fired their AD and they had to buy him out for $7 million. So they're on the hook for some stuff. But where there's a will, there's a way. It's football, people.
Well, I mean, Louisville's not going to be the only suitor, I feel.
I don't care who it is. You want someone to take Brom from Purdue because if Brom's not at Purdue, George Karloftis is not going there. George Karloftis is a bigger version of Mo Hurst.
Watch him.
He is a bigger version of Mo Hurst.
Who's tearing it up in the NFL?
Just telling you, the guy is going to be a ball player.
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider and the MGo Blog Roundtable here, brought to you by Homeshore Lending on Sports Talk 1050. WTK The Ticket. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
So, guys, who wins the West?
Purdue.
You think Purdue wins the West now?
I mean, maybe. Well, I was playing pretty well.
I was thinking Iowa.
I mean, you can't really write off Wisconsin, because if you can protect Alex Hornibrook and you can get any separation from those receivers, he can do some things. And they already beat Iowa. They already beat Northwestern. So, like, they have a one-game season for the division against Purdue.
Right.
And you can't just assume that Purdue is going to be able to hold up against that offensive line.
That's true. I'm sorry, Ed. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
They are going to score 100 points on that Wisconsin defense, I think.
Not get enough possessions if Wisconsin can run the ball.
I go for that.
9-10.
That's what they have to do. It has to be ball control.
It's going to be a slow motion shootout.
The odds are favor Wisconsin. I don't have a number, but because of that win over Iowa, that's why you got to favor Wisconsin.
I still think Purdue, that game's at Purdue, my understanding.
Yes, at Purdue. So Wisconsin still has at Northwestern. They have at Penn State, and they have at Purdue.
Yeah, I got to lean to Purdue on.
Boy, that'd be something. I mean,
yeah,
it's fun. I like it when random
Purdue,
teams pop up.
Purdue has pull up the ears down the stretch here. They're at Michigan State this week, of course, followed by a home matchup with Iowa, at Minnesota, home matchup with Wisconsin, at Indiana. That's manageable.
There's a lot of losable games in there for both those teams. Yeah.
They'll beat Michigan State. You know, Iowa game will be interesting. I think that's going to be a really good game.
Talking point for Michigan State fans after the game is going to be Purdue beat us by more than you did.
See, the great thing for them is their two toughest games they have in West Lafayette. against Iowa and against Wisconsin.
Yeah. Right, so they have the home field.
It's wide open. It's nice. It's more interesting than like every other year in the West where it's like, oh, it's Wisconsin and nobody else.
And so then Iowa, the last one down the stretch. So Iowa, they have at Penn State this week, which will be interesting. And then at Purdue, they host Northwestern, and then it's caking. There's cakewalk the rest of the way because they're at Illinois, and then they host Nebraska. So it's really the next 3 weeks for Iowa. Iowa can get the next, you know, the next three. And
well, they got to be pulling for Purdue in that Purdue-Wisconsin game because they don't have a loss to Wisconsin. I mean, Purdue yet.
734-998-1050. Let's go to the phones. Talk to Mike in Sylvania. Mike, what's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. I want to preface this question is that, you know, O-line unit has drastically improved from the beginning of the year and until now. So I don't want to feel like I'm critiquing them, but I recorded the game last weekend, and it still looked like for like 2.5 quarters that O-line was getting beat up, and then just for whatever reason, just kind of opened up towards after the game. Did you guys kind of see the same thing? And what are you thinking against better D-lines, how the O-line will hold up?
Well, not exactly for me, because the very first series, as we pointed out,
They
had opportunities, and they were provided by very good blocking in that first
game. I think a couple of things stuck out to me. Raekwon Williams is a ball player.
He's
a ball player.
And so is Willekes.
And I didn't like them when Michigan was choosing to try to block Willekes with a tight end. That seemed like
that. I forgot one good one.
I was literally just about to say that. Like, Willekes against Michigan's tight ends went one way and not the right way. And there were a couple other issues. Like, I feel like McCune, he had a trap opportunity against Williams, and he didn't take it. And they're running these not split zone blocking where he needs to like come off the butt of his offensive lineman and go get a linebacker, and he's going way too wide. And that's been happening for like three games. So I thought tight end issues were a lot of Michigan's run issues, especially in the first half.
Yeah, and I feel like Michigan's offensive line struggled during the middle of the game, second, third quarter. But I did think they were excellent on those last two meaningful drives for Michigan.
And Willekes did kind of give both tackles the business a couple times. Like, he was able to spin through to Bushel Beatty. He was able to get through Runyon and get legit pressure. So the issues from the Notre Dame game didn't just go away.
Mm-hmm.
But,
right. I agree with that.
Against a guy who I think is a top-tier defensive end in the Big Ten, in Willekes, they were... Right. They were acceptable.
And I guess I'll keep coming back to this, folks. Look, the ceiling is only so high.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can't expect, you know, all Big Ten caliber. You shouldn't expect all Big Ten caliber performance from some of these. What you're seeing, you should be like, hell yeah, this is great.
This is average.
this is so much better than I thought it was going to be.
Big Ten average for this unit. Great.
This is great. This is average.
That should be your takeaway. Like, man, this offensive line is performing so far above expectations. At least my personal expectations.
I don't think anyone that watches these games is going to disagree with that.
I thought the interior would be pretty good this year. And their organization is 1,000 times better than it was last year. So, you know, I'm pleased with Ed Warner's job.
Well, by the way, punting. Did you guys agree with Michigan's punt choices this
week? You can't punt on 4th and 5 from the 38.
37, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the first
was this the one that went in the end zone.
It was the first one is like, all right, it's 4th and 10, like, you know, whatever. 4th and 5, gotta go for that one. I mean, they had to go for it on 4th and 2 to put the game away. So that was
good. That was good that they did.
But yeah, you gotta have a play on 4th and 5.
734-998-1050. Jake, what's up?
I was just trying to say, what a great day to be a Michigan Wolverine, just not on the football side, but on the basketball and all the other sports. And I just wanted to say, too, and stuff, here's a quick question for everybody. When was the last time we beat in the same year on the football and basketball side of things? All I got to say is total freaking domination, just not in the sports side, but on the recruiting side and everything. And I just want to say thanks again for Eric for the birthday shout-out, and thanks again for you and Ira for playing the birthday song yesterday. And like Harbaugh says, who has it better than us? No freaking buddy. I'll hang up and listen, go blue, win or lose. I'll hang up and listen, go blue.
You talk about boundless enthusiasm. That is indeed Jake. So how are these games this week? going to play out? Purdue at Michigan State.
Oh, Purdue's going to hammer them.
Hey, Brian, Michigan State's a 1.5-point favorite.
How?
How is that possible, like, man?
Maybe they're harping on that Eastern Michigan game.
It would be so Michigan State, like, you know, for them to
come out and play great.
But, like, I don't think Lurkey's going to play in this game.
Oh, you're right.
I got to agree with that.
You remember a couple of years ago they go down to Ohio State?
That was a much better Michigan State
team. It was.
But that was one of the most flukish outcomes in the history of college football.
It may be, and yet that's like Michigan State on a
right. They don't have that mojo against Purdue.
I think
Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, those are the mojo games.
Purdue's going to win that game.
All right, and then, of course, what was the other big one?
Iowa and Penn State.
Iowa at Penn State.
Penn State's offense is really struggling. I think they're feeling the loss of Moorhead. If you can contain McSorley, and I think Iowa is a team that can do that. So I think I have Iowa in a tight one.
Penn State, you know, all by 6 or 7 points.
Ed?
Yeah, Penn State.
All right. That'll do it for us.